College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Drew's making
too late. Drew, you already said it, man. You already said it. People are upset with you on the text line.
Missouri or Kansas.
No. They are deserving to be in the conversation.
Did not say Missouri State. The Bears could do it, in his opinion.
Drew, you cannot backtrack now. People heard you say
I'm not backtracking.
You said K-State will never win a national title, and they are not upset.
I hope they prove me wrong. Go ahead.
Now you're trying to
Avery Johnson coming back.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Now you're trying to play their fight song and all this stuff. No, or Wabash. Nope. Text line says, "How dare you, Drew? Cincinnati's never winning a Super Bowl. Take that." I think they might be right on that.
I mean, they never have.
And I think they might be correct.
History's on their side.
I told you, I think Joe Burrow is going to be Dan Marino. So I tend to agree. I tend to agree. He's a Hall of Famer. You know, you got that going for you. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the trash of the day. We'll also get to some QB regression candidates here in about 8 minutes or so. But let's start with the Royals this hour. They're off today. And we know they're in the middle of the stretch where Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo are both on the IL. And that's why yesterday felt like such a steal. What a win. You had a bullpen game. The offense backed him up in a big way. The bullpen also wasn't bad in a bullpen day. But you needed the offense to get you some support. And they did. We know they're above 500 by, five games as they sit in this series heading into the Twins tomorrow night. So let's say they got another outing or two without Reagans and Lugo. Where do we think they're going to be at during this upcoming stretch, which includes games against the Twins, against the Tigers, and you're going to have another game with Noah Cameron, who's pitched very well. You might have to have another bullpen game mixed in there. Most likely you will. I don't mind.
They probably will. They got some off days. Maybe they can avoid it.
Yeah, including today.
Yeah. Maybe they'll be able to avoid it. I was just trying to think about where, because this whole thing going into the injuries for the pitchers was like, can you hold water? What a start. Honestly, perfect start. You find out the injuries take place, you get 2 or 3 against the Giants team, who were only a half game back of the Dodgers going into that series. That's one of the better teams in the National League. But now you got to go to Minnesota, a team that is, as you know, white hot over the last 3 weeks of the season. A middle-of-the-road Reds team, the best team in the American League in the Tigers. So, like, I think more than anything, a simple question would be, like, can this team be 500 by the time Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans rejoin this rotation? Can you avoid losing enough games? They're not 5 games below 500. Well, that seems like a borderline lock.
Yes.
Like, that seems like there's not even a question. But what I think is really important is that they stay in that 4 to 6 game range back in the division if they don't want to be what we talked about yesterday is the Tigers running away from it. This stretch becomes important from you face the Tigers, you face the Twins, you've got the Cardinals on the other side of this thing too. Ideally, based on the schedule, by the time you're facing the Yankees at home in early June, Reagans and Lugo should be back, making starts for your team, and I don't want you more than 4 to 6 games back of first place, still in a wild card spot, and holding water. And I don't know what it was about that series win against the Logan Webb win yesterday made me feel, had they lost that game, I think that the tenor of this conversation feels different. That game gave me a good boost yesterday. Made me feel a lot better about the position.
Well, because maybe there's some hope that Salvi, you know, can snap out of where he was at. And that, okay, he's still capable of having an opposite field home run like that and having that kind of power in a 3-hit day. I think that's a big part of it. I will say, though, I know it's hard not to do this. It's not, you're asking where they're going to be at in a week or two. It's not about the standings in the division still. It is like, all right, are they 5 or are they 8 above 500? Are they 2 above 500?
To me,
the division thing will
sort. The number of games above 500 matters.
To me, if I know they're 8 games above 500, I have a good idea where that would put them later in the year, I think. Now, when we're in July or August, of course, at some point, the math is going to be the math. You're going to have to start saying, all right, are you 2 back? Or are you 8 back in the division and all that? I totally get that. We'll have the magic number stuff, hopefully, and have, you know, when we get to August or whatever. But right now, I'm not worried that they're 5.5 back of the Tigers. They're 5 above 500. What's that number look like? That to me, unless you look, the Tigers might end up winning this division. By all accounts, they're the favorite to do so. But I'm not worried about how many games. They could be 2 back right now or 7 back. The Royals are 5 above 500. That's what matters right now. We'll get into the true games back convo, at least I will, you know, July, August, and obviously September.
By the time on Monday, we can easily do this, but on Monday, they will be exactly 1/3 of the way through the season. 4 more games, so Friday, Saturday, 3 more games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. By Monday, they will be a full 54 games into the season, exactly gold, 1/3 of the way through the season. So we'll get a good sense then. And I think we roll in a very similar high 80s, low 90s range. I can't remember exactly what the numbers were for the Royals win prediction.
88, I think.
They're on pace for 89 wins as it sits right now, exactly where you would expect this team to be. Maybe the bigger question, even for the Royals and their division hopes, is are the Tigers going to do this forever? And going back to yesterday's conversation a little bit, unfortunately for the Royals, I think the Tigers might have the most complete roster in the American League. Between their pitching and their hitting in the bullpen, they might be the most complete team in the American League. And their biggest weakness, their bullpen, is typically one of the places you can most easily target pitchers in order to make your roster better. And so, like, I don't really love it from that perspective. But, yeah, I still am kind of waiting for a run from the Royals in the sense that I still think they're capable of, like, what the Twins just did, what the Tigers have done earlier. Because the same thing applies. If at any point they hit, the pitching is going more than keeps them in games, man. The pitching wins them a lot of games. Yesterday, they didn't even have a starter. They had to throw out Daniel Lynch. I don't know, we'll talk more about it, but they had to throw out Daniel Lynch. Then they go to Jonathan Bolin. They had to go through the numbers yesterday, and they outpitched the Giants ace in a bullpen game. Like,
and there was a 3-plus inning stretch where the Giants didn't have a hit.
Yeah, I know.
I think from after the he got hit in the 4th inning. I don't believe they had one in the 5th, 6th, or 7th. I think that's how it played out yesterday.
So you're about chasing games above and below 500.
Yeah,
I'll take 500 baseball, by the way, until those guys get back. And just staying 5 games above 500. I assume you'd take the same?
Sure. I mean, right now they're in the middle of a 10-game stretch where they're actually only 4-6. So,
and it doesn't feel that bad.
Well, that's how big yesterday was. You know, it was a bullpen game. You feel like you stole one. You stole
against
one.
Against Logan Webb, you did steal one.
You stole one, and your offense had one of their best performances of the season. And now the question will be, can Salvi carry that into Target Field? As we brought up the numbers yesterday, it's the best he hits on the road is at Target Field. Can that get him going? If he gets going, some of this offensive conversation gets a lot easier for them moving forward.
Knowing everything that's taken place, like knowing that they're without 2 starters, they've had trouble in offense, all that stuff. That game yesterday was the single best feel-good game of the year as far as confidence in the, because this is the thing that we've hinted around, but I don't think we've openly said, like as far as this 500 goes. The single best skill on this team, other than pitching, which is obvious, starting pitching probably, is they are resilient as hell. This is an incredibly battle-tested and resilient team. They got ultimate fight or whatever you want to say. They just know how to, like, win baseball games. Yesterday is an auto loss on a book. You're going up against their dude, your bullpen. You haven't hit in a month. Salvi, you know, like, that's an L. That's an L 90% of the time based on just, like, let's look at everything working against you. For a base, I don't know, baseball's baseball and things happen.
Yeah, definitely. Yesterday was definitely a baseball is baseball kind of day.
And they didn't just win. Yeah. They kicked their ass.
They did.
Started from the jump, hit, ran, played good, great defense. That play by Kyle Isbell when the bases are loaded with 2 outs in the early part, the play by Drew Waters in the right field, all that stuff. It was just like, they're such a resilient team. That is so, like, confidence-inducing for me.
Coming up in about 6 minutes, we will get to the trash of the day. But earlier in the week, we were having a conversation about how tough the AFC West could be. And when you looked at the quarterback-coach combinations, and I was saying, you know, I think this is the best QB-coach combination that the AFC West has had across the board. And you had Geno Smith ranked higher than Bo Nix. We were like, okay, it's pretty close. And you made the comment just kind of in passing. And I was like, okay, let's dive deeper into this. He said, hey, I think Bo Nix is a big time regression candidate.
Yeah.
Huge. So I said, all right, let's go through this. And we'll ask the text line as well. 913-586-7965. who do you actually think are the biggest QB regression candidates in the NFL? Typically, now you can mention a name you want. Typically, when this conversation happens, Younger. It's about guys that are in the first, second, or third year.
Although
in the league.
I'd say Jared Goff deserves to be a part of this conversation.
But it doesn't have to just be guys on rookie contracts. So we know your answer is you think Bo Nix, out of all quarterbacks, is the biggest regression candidate in the league. Is that what you're saying?
Out of any quarterback in the NFL who was a full time starter last year, I think he is the single biggest favorite to be a regression candidate out of any of them. There's a couple of veterans, right? I think it's like, do you want to kick around the possibility of Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield?
Okay.
Or like, you know, like that ilk mm-hmm. or Brock Purdy in the earlier part of the stuff. But Bo Nix
he already regressed last year. Brock Purdy already had his regression year, I would argue.
But like a lot of times it happens in year one to year two. So like if people toss Jaden Daniels around, I wouldn't be surprised by it because of just how good he was.
That's what's
but
weird
Bo Nix
about
was
him.
Too good. The offensive line was too good. They suffered so few injuries. I think the division is better, and that impacts everyone, not just the Chiefs. For all those reasons, I think Bo Nix is going to take the biggest step back. Doesn't mean he can't like go back forward in year three and settle into being an average guy, but I don't think his ceiling's high enough to avoid regression.
So I'm with you on the ceiling. That was the one thing I loved about last year is watching him play and seeing the Broncos draft him. He's good enough. He's going to get a contract and he's going to be their starter for a while, but you don't have Josh Allen in your division or something like that. I think the ceiling is lower. I disagree that he's the biggest regression candidate only because of the scheme. I think the way Sean Payton wants his quarterbacks to play and he's got a good O-line, I think Bo Nix is perfect for that system. I think the floor is very high. So I don't,
think he's going to regress too much because the floor.
Are his numbers going to be identical? I don't know. He had 3,700 yards passing, 29 touchdowns, 12 picks. Could his touchdowns go down to 25? His picks go up to 14? Sure. I mean, I don't know if we would count that as a massive regression, but I hear you. I think the system allows Bo Nix to have consistent success, but it's capped. For me, look, Jaden Daniels is an obvious answer only because he was that special.
And I just watched about it, CJ Stroud.
He was that special. And yes, Stroud had the sophomore slump and now there's more film on him. The question is, do you think Jaden Daniels is just that dude or he's just going to be that kind of player? And I kind of do. I think the Commanders as a team might regress record-wise. I don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to fall off the way Stroud did, assuming their offensive line is better also because they went out and got Laremy Tunsil. For me, I'll give you one veteran name and one younger guy. Veteran, I agree. You kind of mentioned Baker. I think Baker, here's the problem I have with him. He's had a career resurgence. He's been awesome. He's so fun to watch. It's now another year where he lost his offensive coordinator. Yeah. He lost Canales to Carolina. Now he just lost Liam Cohen to Jacksonville, Mr. Duvall. So I think that's my concern on the veteran end. Baker had 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns, 16 interceptions last year. I think that's coming down a bit. So that's my veteran that I think could regress. Younger quarterback, it's weird because out of the other rookies last year, if you're not saying Jaden Daniels, and I disagree with you on Bo Nix, then I don't
Stroud regress further. That seems unlikely.
Right. I think
text line said Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, but he's, are we still, okay. I mean,
regress.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't just you, I mean, who he is. Drew sent us a tweet the other day of comparing the first 60 career starts between Trevor Lawrence and Daniel Jones. Yeah. And they were weirdly similar.
Trevor Lawrence, but he's already regressed, I think.
Yeah. For me, this is, I don't have a second or third year guy that's a candidate. For me, it is Baker and then Sam Darnold seems so obvious. He's not going to be Jet Sam Darnold, but there's no way without Justin Jefferson, without Kevin O'Connell, he's going to go to Seattle and put up anywhere in the number. Reminder, Sam Darnold, prior to the two playoff games or whatever, where he was just dreadful at the end of the season, 4,300 yards, 35 touchdowns, 12 picks. He is regressing. I feel very confident. I don't think that's that crazy if it take it all. I think it makes a ton of sense. So that's where I'm at. What was the comparison, though, Trevor Lawrence to Daniel Jones?
First career 60 starts, Trevor Lawrence versus Daniel Jones. Let's take the record out of it, although they are identical. 22-38 versus 22-37-1.
Okay.
Total yards, not passing yards, just total yards. This is where Daniel Jones ends up catching up because of the rushing, probably. 14,605 for Daniel Jones, 14,898. So a 300-yard difference between the two. Passing touchdown to interception ratio, 62-42 for Daniel Jones, 69-46 for Trevor Lawrence, almost exactly the same. Passer rating is within 0.7, and Daniel Jones actually has a higher completion percentage. I'm not kidding. When you look at that stats, for their first 60 starts in the NFL, Daniel Jones is just as good as Trevor Lawrence. And think about how differently we discuss those quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence's contract, if he doesn't play significantly better, and I mean soon, is an anchor that will sink their ass all the way across the sea to permanently playing in London. They won't be able to overcome it. He's just like...
I understand. By the way,
because of where he was drafted in the thing, it's just hard to overlook.
This is the year for Trevor Lawrence.
And we would all still, take Trevor Lawrence over Daniel Jones. But but the numbers are interesting. That's for sure.
I think this is the year where we're going to learn because he's
gotten. I wouldn't want either, but yes.
Because, I mean, Trevor Lawrence started his career with Urban Meyer, who was too busy kicking the kicker, actually, on the sideline and all the crap that
went
on.
That was a fair excuse, if you will, for why.
Doug Peterson really wasn't that great.
But now you're on your third head coach now, and sometimes you say that's a negative, but also, like, at some point they've surrounded you with weapons. ETN, and I know Ridley's not there now, but at one point, ETN.
Now they've got Brian
Thomas Jr. is a stud. He's one of the best receivers in the game. He was one of the best rookies last year. So, yeah, let's see what happens for Trevor Lawrence this upcoming year. All right, let's get to it.
Trash of the day.
We had a shorter show yesterday, so we didn't get to this, but it fits for the trash of the day. We go to St. Louis. There is I think it's an online sports show. I don't know if it's on the radio or not. I think it may be just an online sports show. The Sports Hub St. Louis.
Okay.
And they were talking earlier in the week about the NFL schedule. And we all know that the Chiefs have tried to market in St. Louis ever since the Rams left. And a lot of Chiefs games air in St. Louis. It's treated like another Kansas City market from a TV perspective. And so one of the hosts on this show in St. Louis, the Sports Hub STL, says he's sick of having the Chiefs shoved down his throat.
Brooke, you know what? One thing I hate?
What?
I hate the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs are just shoved down St. Louis's throat because they want this market so badly. Randy. And so they make it so that all of their games are on TV in St. Louis. It's terrible. Randy. I hate it. Yes.
That's what people do.
So, I mean, I get the schedule yesterday. Last night. You know, they've got 8 games, the Chiefs, Kansas City Chiefs. They have 8 standalone games, 7 in primetime, 1 on Thanksgiving, that apparently are being directed only to St. Louis. 8 of them.
Apparently.
Plus 4 more. They're playing the Broncos, the Ravens, the Bills, and the Eagles. They're all playing them at 3:25 in the afternoon. And it's only apparently going to like 5% of the country because they're trying to shove the Chiefs down our throat.
You didn't know that.
12 of their 16 games that
they're
are scheduled
to
this.
They're trying to force you to be a Chiefs fan. Whether you want to or not, you have to be a Chiefs fan if you live here in St. Louis. It's Missouri's team, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's why I'm really mad that I don't know why they do this to us. It would be different if the Chiefs were any good and they got any national TV games. But apparently we're only getting like Sunday night football, Monday night football, Thursday night football, Thanksgiving football. We only get those here in St. Louis. The rest of the country is not having the Chiefs shoved down their throat.
All right, so that was from a show, STL
this
Sports.
This man's living in a different universe.
I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about. Does he not understand when they're primetime games? Does he think that only St. Louis and Kansas City see those games?
The indoctrination is like the spinning wheel of hypnotoad. Just like trapping them in it?
He thinks that Monday Night Football only airs in Kansas City and St. Louis and the team they're playing? Does he understand the concept of that? The primetime games you're getting, everybody's getting. The 3:25 kickoffs, 95% of the country is getting. The rare noon kickoff the Chiefs have, St. Louis might get that over Cincinnati or Baltimore because, St. Louis is now considered a Chiefs market. You don't have to watch the Chiefs, but his whole logic, it just completely wrong.
The reason you're getting the games is because you're closer than any other. You're not going to get Bears games because you're closer to Kansas City than you are to Chicago.
Correct.
Go have that crappy Prevail cheese pizza and go watch, I don't know, the Battle Hawks and go watch the minor leagues.
That's right.
Here's a question I have for you. Is the rivalry between, as you trash St. Louis, is the rivalry between St. Louis and Kansas City so strong that you are not interested in St. Louis fans becoming Chiefs fans?
I have no issue with that.
Are you okay with them coming over?
No, they can be Chiefs fans all day long. But this guy is just wrong with his assessment of how the scheduling works. And I would say, like, if you don't want the Chiefs, what team are you trying to watch? What team does he want to watch so badly? You want to watch the team and the owner that
he
left your ass?
He can't wait to see some Titans games.
Like, you want to watch watch Kroenke's team that bailed on you? Who are you trying to watch instead?
Maybe it's the Colts because Indy's closer to as close.
He
to
said
St.
they'd
Louis
probably rather watch the Cowboys all the time.
Yeah, you know? Well, they're also on plenty for you too. Don't worry.
I always you'll be able to watch the Chiefs and the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
The Cardinals fans in like Kansas City always drove me crazy because it just felt like, oh, must be nice, you know. All these years, you didn't have to suffer like the rest of us.
People, in the-
so part of me doesn't want to get them to let them enjoy the Chiefs. Nah, I don't think so.
They lost two NFL
spent all
teams.
This time. Tough.
Two.
Sucks to be you, I guess.
And then he said it'd be different
don't
if the
be
Chiefs
Bears
were-
fans, you know?
Well, then he said it'd be any different if the Chiefs were any good. It's like, have you been living under a rock for the last, like,
someone says
years?
They think he was being sarcastic the entire time.
I can't tell.
The only part
when
where
I
he
watched
was,
his face, I couldn't tell.
He sounded
the
serious.
Only part where I thought he was sarcastic is when he said, at least if they were good or something. I think that might have been sarcasm, obviously. But the rest, no, I think legitimately that's how he felt. A lot of people on the text line have texted in, Cody, and said they believe this guy sounds like Jay Binkley, like from his voice, not like the take, but his voice.
Brooke, you know what? One thing I hate.
What?
That first, I will say.
They think he sounds like Bink's brother.
That first, that first line, kind of.
Brooke, you know what? One thing I hate.
That first
right
line,
there,
a little.
That, when he says hate.
Brooke, you know what? One thing I hate.
Oh,
it sounds like Bink.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. That first one, kind of. But don't lump Bink with that guy. You know? Jeez. Although, is Bink a Battlehawks guy?
I have no idea.
Who's his?
Bink has mentioned the Battlehawks multiple times on this show.
Okay.
Whether it be the Bengals are going to take the Battlehawks, or they're going to move to St. Louis and become the Battlehawks, or if it just randomly comes up, Bink loves himself some St. Louis Battlehawk action.
Go. All right, that's the trash of the day. Up next, Chiefs right half hour. What Chiefs player is the most important for themselves, right? Big year, contract year, whatever it may be. I've got a surprise name for you. We'll also get into the last 25 years in the NFL and where people have the Chiefs. That's next.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Coming up in 25 minutes, we will get right back into the Royals, including Mikel Garcia, who continues to hit. And yesterday he was leading off. Now, that was not unheard of with Jonathan India having the day off, but could that be part of the solution for the offense? So we'll get into that. And something that I think Jay Binkley has to do next month, has to do it. After years and years of advocating for something and someone in an event, he has to do it. We'll tell you what that is coming up next hour.
Of course, the Chiefs Red Half Hour is brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. I'm with you, by the way, in the Binkley thing. We will address that, Bink, so please be listening at 12:15 today, as we have to get into that for you in particular, but just maybe in general. I'd ask myself a question because, you know, like off-season Chiefs conversations turn into, what does this look like? What does the Chiefs roster look like? You know, we're all curious about left tackle again. But then I was just thinking about some of the players that we spent a lot of time talking about. Kingsley Suamataia, Felix Anudike Uzama, some of the even veteran players, as I think that this comes into it. And I was asking myself the obvious question, which is, which player this year is it most important for season-wise as their future looks in Kansas City? So your obvious point is to go to some of the players I just mentioned. Some of the young guys who are like, hey, what's your future look like? We would have said Clyde Edwards-Helaire going into 2 years ago, probably. Felix and Kingsley make a lot of sense this year. I think Hollywood, maybe if you thought that there was going to be a long-term answer for him, but even that doesn't fully make sense, or a Minshew in some of this. So I want your answer, 913-586-7965, because I do think that there are a lot of interesting players this year. And honestly, Kingsley, for me, would be top of the book because he either has a home or he's off this team.
Right.
He's either the starting left guard for this team or he is an unimportant player who will never play regular starting minutes for this team, barring some major injury, and likely will not be on this team in the long haul. From a veteran perspective, I think I can make an argument for George Karlaftis, because I think they're going to make him prove it one more time to give him the big dough gold. So, like, if he's going to be a long-term player here in Kansas City, I kind of feel like he's got to earn it. But from the young player perspective, Kingsley feels like he's either playing for a job or he doesn't have a job at all.
Yeah, he's at the top of the list because his entire future, whether he's going to be a career backup, whether he's going to be in the league for a long time or not, is likely dependent on this year. I mean, that's how massive it is. If he ends up starting at left guard immediately and he's good, well, then, okay, he has a chance to be a guard in this league for a very long time. And, you know, the first round or the second round pick starting at left tackle for a couple games last year and how that was a failure, that kind of stuff gets further and further away down the road. And if he's a guard in this league for 8 years or something like that, then that won't be as problematic, obviously. So he's at the top of the list. I'll give you another name that might surprise you, though, because I thought about this a little bit differently. And it's not that this player hasn't had good seasons yet, but given off-the-field situations and then an injury that kept him out for much of last season, I'm talking about his own future in Kansas City. I'm talking about the big payday that could happen if everything goes well. Rashee Rice.
Okay.
Rashee Rice, to me, this is a big year for him. Not that I've never seen him have a good year in the league, and he was pacing for a huge year last year, the first 3 weeks in. But I would say it's Rashee Rice. You know, is he going to get suspended or not? We'll play some role in this. So can he have no off-the-field issues? Can he stay healthy? Can he take over the number one wide receiver role like he was already going to do last year? Can he have that 1,200-plus yard season? If he does, that puts him in position to have a big payday in a couple of years. If he doesn't because he's suspended, he gets hurt or something like that, then I think we have a different conversation about what his long-term future is in Kansas City. So I would say this is a huge year for him. We're not wanting to see if the ability is there. It's more just, can he replicate it? Can he stay healthy?
The only way to get paid is
squeaky clean.
Yeah, that's it. The only way to get paid is squeaky clean off the field and start having that big statistical year so it's worth giving you the money in the long haul. The 816 said Jaden Hicks replacing Justin Reed. Feels like, is he going to be the eventual star? He's only in year two.
Well, that's a
question. So it doesn't feel like it's a big question for the team, but it doesn't feel like a big swing year for him. I saw over on YouTube, somebody mentioned Pacheco. Same problem is like, even if he had 1,000, 1,200 all-purpose yards, does that really change his future in Kansas City? Like, I do think that it comes down to, like, are you risking losing your job or your long-term future in Kansas City is in jeopardy if you don't start putting it together?
Yeah, for the sake of this convo, of course, as we get through the offseason and up at training camp, the biggest question marks is a different convo versus we're just talking about from an individual player perspective. Yeah, their future earnings, basically their future contract, their future on this team, their future in the league. How big is it? Yeah, every player needs to have a good year if they want to get paid. But there's certain players, I think it's very obvious that their time in Kansas City can be altered directly based off of what they do this year.
I think there's one that I don't know if you guys agree with this. He's going into his fourth year.
Okay.
Leo Chenault. Not necessarily from a
fairness
perspective.
If it just is like mediocre, he's probably no longer a Chief anymore.
Yeah,
right?
I think because linebackers, they paid Nick Bolton. Mm-hmm. Drew Tranquil has been really good for them. Does Leo Chenault take another step where he made some big plays last year in individual moments, but is there any sort of a bigger step forward where Chiefs fans say we can't lose that guy? Like, I think we need Leo on the roster where he's getting into that fourth year of the contract. Remember if that's, I think this is the last year, I would assume. Fourth year is a third round pick. I'm not sure exactly what the contract situation is regarding him, just his future in KC. Because, I mean, if he has okay season last year, to give you some numbers, he had 60 tackles, which is less than 2022. He had less sacks than 2023. Maybe if he just puts similar numbers as last year, they think, hey, you know what? We can go and get a linebacker in the second or third round, and he can
exactly
replace.
Exactly, though. But that's Leo. I guess, why I didn't think of him is, he's a very nice player. He came up with some big-time plays. He's great on special teams, super athletic. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy in this league that gets a huge four-year deal worth, you know, $50 million or something. Like, I don't believe that's not even a shot at him. I just don't think that's his trajectory. He's going to be in the league for a very long time. He could be a 10-year pro. I don't think there's, like, it sounds terrible when I'm like, I don't think there's another level to his game. I mean, like, I don't think he's ever going to be like the star linebacker. He's going to be one of those, like, it sounds terrible, but like, just role type of players that
contributing
is,
linebacker.
Yeah.
Nice player. Lots of teams like having him. Yeah. Never the star. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's out of the question, but if Drew's saying he's got another level to his game, then
in terms of the future for the Chiefs, because I mean, if we're talking about big paydays, then Trey McDuffie's got a really big season ahead of him too.
Nah, but he's getting paid no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
So, like, for me, I actually don't think, like, I just think he's getting paid no matter what. Like, I don't think it actually matters. And to complicate what Gold's saying about Rashee Rice is, he's going to have to do all the things Gold's saying to, like, prove his worth to the organization, but he's going to have to do it while likely on some sort of, we think, suspension for some amount of games. So next year, we might be having the same conversation about Rashee Rice, where he hasn't been paid yet. They didn't give him the contract in the offseason. He's in his last full year of a deal, and they could still franchise tag him, but he once again has to reprove his purpose to the team and all this. Look, the young players are Kingsley and Felix, because if they don't do something this year, they're not going to be on the team in a year after that. Like, Felix, his best chance is to become a role player, and he just gets Mike Dana's contract, and he gets another contract with Kansas City, but really just to, like, be on the defensive line, not be a regular part of the defensive line. And Kingsley, again, this is his last chance to start for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's not going to get another opportunity or a better opportunity than the one at left guard he's going to get this offseason. Chanel could get the Willie Gay type deal. He could get, he could get one of those smaller type deals like the text line is saying, but it just kind of depends on, I just feel like you kind of know about Willie or Leo Chanel. Is that like, I just feel like I kind of know what kind of player he is, what he adds. I know his value. The Chiefs know his value. But that value is not going to be like huge dollars in free agency.
I mean, aren't we there though with Felix too, where he's not going to get paid huge dollars?
Some people are not. Some people want to see year three. He's still an incredibly young player. Maybe there's still a boom year somewhere.
Let's say he gets 5 sacks. He's not getting paid big money.
No, but if he had seven or eight, I'm not saying
this is going to happen, but if he had 5 this year and 5 next year, you'd be surprised by the deal he would get from somebody. Look what Turk Warren just got.
He's not getting Turk Warren money if he gets 5 sacks.
Isn't that the number of sacks Turk Warren?
I'm not saying Turk's a D tackle.
Felix is supposed to get a defensive.
Listed as a defensive end, actually.
Is he really?
He plays both, but yeah.
Because Felix is supposed to be getting like 7, 8, 9.
I'm not telling you that I think Felix.
He's never getting that. I don't think.
By no means am I telling you that Felix is going to have 2 straight years of 5 sack seasons. That's not what I'm predicting. But my point is,
Turk Warren had
13 and a half his entire career, had 6.5 last year, and he's 26.
And got $54 million.
If Felix, out of nowhere, and truly out of nowhere, had 5 sacks 2 years in a row, somebody's paying him. Somebody's absolutely paying him.
Agba money or something. I don't know. He's not going to get.
I don't think that's going to happen the way things are trending right now, but yeah.
But that's why it's a huge swing year. Yeah. When we're mentioning players for their future as, and I say this as a Chief sometimes, because their best chance to stay a Chief is to perform now, not come back around, because the truth is, if Felix did have back-to-back 5 sack seasons, that might be the kind of player you let walk, Gold. But maybe there's a temptation because you have a first-round pick invested in him. Maybe you are the team who's willing to pay him to go with it. And look, I don't think a 5 sack season is going to be pick up the fifth-year option kind of money.
No.
But it's like another thing that like enters the conversation.
If you're a free agent, and in this case you'd be under 26 or 25 in 2 years, and you had 10 sacks in the last 2 seasons, somebody's going to pay you. I mean,
pretty good money, honestly.
It's not necessarily for their future as a Chief, but does Charles Domenico kind of fit in that same category? Where
for sure.
Just in general to get paid, because absolutely, he's gotten 1 year deals the last 2 years, yeah, just to get a multi-year deal.
No doubt. Yeah. He clearly thought he should have got more money on the open market. He didn't. He came back here. Can he have a full season? He has yet to have a full season in a Chief uniform. One was his own doing. The other was an unfortunate injury. So if he can get through 18 games, or 17 games, 18 weeks, he has been able to show that when he's on the field, he's pretty damn dominant. And if he could have a full healthy season and have that, let's call it 9.5 to 11 sacks or something like that. Yeah. Then he's got a chance. Then he's got a real chance to get a nice payday next offseason.
I think Karlaftis, it is a huge payday year. He goes back out and puts double digits on the board again. He does another 10 sack season. Price tag up on Karlaftis. Like, he has a chance because the Chiefs haven't paid him yet. And you and I both know he's behind at least 2 people in the contract extension game right now. He's behind Trent McDuffie and Trey Smith. Like, he's not getting a deal before either of those.
They gotta get this Trey Smith thing done.
July, less than 2 months.
Yeah, I guess July 15th, 16th, something like that. So we're under 2 months for the deadline.
We don't have to worry too much yet.
No.
But by then, I want to be worried about MLB trade deadline, I don't want to be worried about Trey Smith.
We can multitask. We can do both. We're able to do that.
And then we'll be a camp man in no time. Whew.
Yeah, St. Joe is going to be here before we know it. St. Joe is going to be here. We're going to be up there before we know it, broadcasting from a tent and hot and humid St. Joe.
But you know what? Last year was actually kind of mild.
It was. That's true.
We're probably not going to get lucky 2 years in a row like that because the year before was miserable.
I think this year we sweat pool. I think this year we try to get Drew to come up for a couple shows, and Drew can watch what a training camp of a championship caliber team looks like. So he can then know the difference between him and his Bengals. Uh-huh. You need to come up there and watch what a championship caliber camp looks like.
This is what one of the toughest camps in the league looks like.
You need to get up there. You can make them work. Yeah, which actually brings me to, I wasn't planning on talking about this, but it just reminded me. Last night, our boss, Steven Spector, sent out a tweet. He was watching
twice.
I think this is 12 hours. I think this is fair.
Let me get to it. Let's let the text line decide. Drew's already getting. I hadn't even said it yet.
Because I know what the text line's going to say. I know it.
Spec sent out a tweet. Said, how close are Arrowhead and Madison Square Garden on the list of iconic sports venues? Because last night, for those that don't know, the Pacers were playing in the Eastern Conference Finals in New York against the Knicks. Madison Square Garden goes to overtime. Halliburton hits the shot to send it to OT. He thought he had a game winner. Epic game. Epic collapse by the Knicks. I loved every second of it. So did Drew because it's his Pacers. Anyway, so Speck asked the question about Arrowhead versus MSG. One of the responses was from our very own Drew Nix at Drew B. Nix. He said, both are in a top 10. Arrowhead is the Boston Garden. Lambeau is MSG. Now let me go hide. ... And here's my only issue with this tweet. Here's my only issue. Because I'm not claiming Arrowhead's the best venue in all
look,
the
it's
world.
It's behind Fenway and Wrigley.
But I take issue with your tweet because you said Arrowhead's the Boston Garden. Lambeau is MSG. You have not gone to a game at Arrowhead. So you cannot answer this question
yet. But I've never
been
to Fenway, I have an opinion that it's one of the top sports
I've been to Lambeau. I've been to
MSG.
You're
the only one that's been to Lambeau, at least for a game.
I've never been to the Boston Garden, but I'm just saying... You gotta go to a game at Arrow before I think you can have this strong opinion on it. I will say though, in the top 10, I think that's a fair thing to say.
I
don't know if I agree with your direct comp to the Boston Garden or whatever, but like
I don't feel like Boston Garden.
That's a well known arena.
I feel like it's below though.
It's ruckus.
Arrowhead is a top 10 sports venue. So I don't disagree with the overarching point, but I don't know if you can be the person to you got a few pushback on Twitter last night for what.
I think it's hard to. I guess, quote unquote, validate my opinion based on that.
Go to week two, Chiefs, Eagles. Week two, go to that game. It's an afternoon game. It's not even a late night for you. 3:25 kick. You can watch Jalen Hurts. You can watch a team that's capable of winning a ring on both sides. You know, you can two teams that have won rings in the last 5 years, something your Bengals haven't done ever.
I think it's so hard to do, like, if you just say, all U.S. sporting venues for sports. Well, then I got to include like Augusta and a million other things that really complicate it. If it's just a cross sports comparison, Madison Square Gardens is the most Staples.
It's the most famous.
It's not called Staples anymore, but
it's
like
crypto.com.
You know
or whatever,
exactly what I'm talking about. When I say Staples.
MSG is known as the most famous arena in the world. That's what they call it. And I actually tend to agree.
And I think Boston Garden's probably like fifth or fourth amongst most famous NBA sporting. So like in the NFL, where does Arrowhead rank amongst most?
I think you could say it's Staples. I think you could say Arrowhead is Staples.
Yeah, I think it's more like two. It's like 1B or 2 or, you know, like I don't think it's as far down as Boston Garden in the NFL. I think Lambeau's one.
It's Lambeau and Arrowhead,
I think
man.
It's Lambeau. And
it's Lambeau and Arrowhead.
There aren't that many old football and we're stadiums not,
again,
in
we're,
the NFL.
We're talking about the entire package because environment-wise, Arrowhead's the best environment from a crowd standpoint in the NFL. It just is. I'm not saying it's the best stadium in the NFL. From an environment, it is the best environment
enough,
at NFL
yeah,
game.
I tend to agree. Most people seem to agree who've been to everything.
And I told you guys, I was at Lambeau 2 years ago. Lambeau is incredible. And everything around the stadium added to it. That's what Arrowhead doesn't have right now, right? We have the tailgating, which is top notch, as good as it gets in the league. I love the setup that they had around the stadium. Stadium, obviously, inside what they've done to keep the bleachers and all that kind of stuff and keep the historical aspect is incredible. I think Arrowhead is a better environment, though, if that makes sense, for fans during the game, the crowd noise, all of that.
I think that if you were to throw a baseball... if you were to throw a baseball stadium in there, like old Yankee Stadium would be in there. But I think Lambeau, MSG, and Wrigley Field are clumped together in terms of iconic, Wrigley just recently got a full scoreboard. I went to a game at Wrigley that didn't have a scoreboard yet. It was a day game, only organ music. MSG plays the organ music. Like, it just feels like an iconic venue.
Baseball's got a lot,
that is
though,
old school. Yeah,
it's an old sport, and they've decided to hold on to their classic venues. The NFL doesn't have that many classic venues. The NBA doesn't have that many classic venues.
Yeah.
Like, it has more. It has more than certainly the NFL does, but, like, they've started to replace some of those.
The NFL,
right?
Only has the two, which is Arrowhead and Lambeau. I think you guys are spot. Somebody said Soldier Field.
It's a dump. Everyone hates it.
It does not hit the same as Arrowhead or Lambeau by any stretch at all. It's not close.
I've never been to Soldier Field.
No, but it also, like, you don't hear people talk about it when they're talking the way they talk about Lambeau or Arrowhead.
And that was, look,
this goes back to the same stadium thing. This is why Clark Hunt doesn't want, I don't think he actually wants to move. I think he wants to just renovate Arrowhead and stay there. I think if he had any choice and the money were created equal and everything was the same and he got to just choose, his team would stay at Arrowhead because of this exact conversation.
The tweet was not a dig at Kansas City, Arrowhead at all.
I only brought it up because it brought up the past convo, which is you haven't gone to a game at Arrowhead, and so I'm giving you a hard time because of that. You've got to go to a Chiefs game, for crying out loud. This year, this will be what? Going on, this will be your third football season with us. You've got to go to a damn game this year at Arrowhead.
It's a heavy hitter slate, Drew.
Great slate.
These are the teams you can see in Arrowhead: the Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champion, the Ravens, the Lions, any of the divisional teams, the Commanders.
Lions game might be the one. When is that one? October?
Juice across the board. That one's October 12th.
That might be the game.
That's a Sunday night football.
That might be the game.
I'm halfway tempted. The boss needs to make it an assignment almost. Speck almost has to be like, Drew, you just got to go once.
Am I able to go as a fan? I want to go as a fan.
Well, yeah,
I want to go
as a fan.
I think you should go as a fan as well. I think you should go as a fan as well.
I want to be able to be in the stadium, not in the box. Somebody said, I'll protect you if you wear a Bengals jersey. The Bengals don't play me until they play in the playoffs.
Someone says, how have we not got him a press pass? No. Drew will admit, this is not a he had multiple opportunities to go last year.
It's not a press pass issue.
He has a pass to go, or he did last year.
It's not a pass issue. I think you're right in the fact that in the text line, it said, I need to go as a fan. I need to be in the bowl.
Yep.
I need to be down there.
You do.
Outside. Yes, mm-hmm. I agree. That Lions game might be the one. Because
it's pretty much an endless choice. The only bad home game is the Raiders. Every other one is
good. And even that, at least it's a rivalry game.
It's a rivalry. Chargers, Broncos, Lions, Ravens, Eagles. I mean, it's just like Commanders. It is just hit after hit at home this year.
I'm very excited because
tremendous home
slate. You obviously, you know me, the college football fan.
Uh-huh,
you guys talk about crowd energy.
Yes.
The only thing that they need,
don't say it again.
You said the Lions game for Sunday night.
You
said the Lions game for Sunday night.
Don't do it.
I don't need t-shirts.
No. They don't need a whiteout or a red
rally towel.
You said the Lions game Sunday night.
Yeah.
That screams to me. All uniforms, all icy whites, white out with the towels. Yes. Play Mo Bamba as the team comes out.
No.
Exactly what we need.
It's the closest thing to a college atmosphere that professional sports has. That is Arrowhead. But last year you suggested they needed to do giveaways and whiteouts. This is not minor league baseball. This isn't college football. Arrowhead doesn't need, corny theme nights for their games. No.
Someone said, I would love to hear Drew say fantastic after a locker room interview.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Quit trying to shove the Chiefs down my throat.
That's right.
Like that St. Louis guy.
That's right.
Brooke, you know what? One thing I hate.
What? That does
I hate
kind
the fact
sound like
that
sounds like
the Kansas City Chiefs are just shoved down St. Louis's throat.
The longer it plays, the less it sounds like pink, but that first, 2 seconds.
Up next, we'll get to what's trending, and we'll talk more about Michael Garcia and the Royals, and is that part of the solution with the lineup? Coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.